The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hello! Welcome to episode 7 of our amazing Slate Money Succession recap podcast. This is one close to my heart because I'm English, of course, and most of the episode takes place in England. And my favorite character, the mum, comes on, who we have to talk about. Anyway, I am Felix Salmon of Axios. I'm here with two,
count them, better get this right,
two
Felix.
Members of the HuffPost team.
Well done, Felix.
Yay. Hey, I got it right. There's Emily Peck.
Hello.
Who writes about, what's your beat at HuffPost?
Let's say gender and economics.
Gender and economics. And then we have the one and only Lydia Polgreen, who runs the entire thing.
It's true.
Congratulations on being Emily's boss.
I feel
Lydia's
very,
my boss's 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 boss.
I feel very lucky to be Emily's boss. She's terrific.
But Lydia, you didn't just come here to talk about Succession. You brought your wife.
I did. And, we can introduce
Candy, you. Introduce Hi. Yourself.
Candy, fight. And wife of Lydia.
Wife of Lydia.
And photographer, artist.
And photographer, artist. And we really wanted you because, A, you're awesome, but B, you put this tweet out, which June Thomas, the queen of all things Slate podcast, circulated immediately to the entire crew, where you said that Succession is the queerest show on TV.
It is.
And so
I believe it is.
You believe it is, even after this episode, which is probably the most heterosexual episode of Succession ever.
It is. Once again.
So we need to talk about all of this. So I can't wait to get stuck in. Emily, you're the one who always has like a structure in mind.
Yes. Okay. Well, this episode is called Return. And in this episode, we return to London, the scene of the crime. And it's also a homecoming of sorts for the Roy boys and girl to see their terrible anorexic mother. Is that a good summary?
Is she anorexic?
I can talk about that for a long time.
Well,
I
mean, talk about that.
I mean, so when Logan is talking to Kendall and Roman about how they're going to have to go and, you know, bribe their mother so she doesn't, you know, take her shares elsewhere, he asks in passing, oh, you're going to go see your mom. What's that dinner going to be like? And Roman says something like, what is it? I don't know.
Something about three trout and fill up on mustard.
It's three muddy trout for six.
And some fill up on mustard. And this, like, I've never seen Logan squeal with delight before the way he does in reaction. And then when they do get finally to the dinner, she comes out with this dish of pigeon and says, you know, be careful when you eat that. It has shot in it and some feathers. And the implication is this woman does not eat. She's very thin and she doesn't feed her children because she's not very maternal either. Well, but I was thinking eating disorder. And they ate before, yeah. Yes.
I mean, I think to me, and there's so much to unpack with a mother. And there's the literal starvation, but I think more importantly, the metaphorical starvation.
Yes,
and also some callbacks, right? I mean, you have this moment in the episode where Logan sort of semi apologizes to Roman for slugging him in the face. It's not something I do, and then Roman kind of just doesn't know what to do, so he starts babbling about how there are so many buildings in cars. But I thought that the fact that the mother warns Roman to watch out while eating this was sort of a callback to his teeth being broken by
You'll
his
lose
father.
A tooth.
You know, and it's just, I just thought, oh my gosh, these people, these poor, I mean, poor, they're horrible humans, but they're really fucked both ways.
I mean, you can really see in this episode how unloved these adult children are. I mean, that heartbreaking scene where Kendall just wants to talk to his mommy and like confess his sins to her, and she will not let him talk to her. She will not let him. She won't. She says, oh, of course, let's get into it. But she doesn't, you know, sit down at the table with him. She keeps eating. What is she eating? I'm obsessed with what this woman is eating.
Oh, so there's a great line, actually, apropos her anorexia, which I didn't pick up on, but now I realize is totally a thing. When she brings out the pigeon to the table, and there's like some grumbling about the pigeon, and she's like, "Well, you don't want a great bolus of gubbins."
Oh yeah, what can you translate that?
What does that mean?
Yeah, what is that?
It's very English. It basically just means a whopping great bowl of stuff. But bolus of gubbins? I mean, someone wrote that and just had so much fun writing that line.
Well, look, Kendall's gone to the pub, apparently, so I've just had a little bit of pigeon done. Didn't think anyone would be feeling terribly hungry. I know I'm not.
No, right.
Don't want to get...
Of course not.
Bolus of gubbins. Take a plate.
Thank you.
Catch.
So, how are you?
I might just as well ask you if you're going to go into all that.
It wasn't intended as an aggressive question, Mom. It's...
No, I'm fine. Rory's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So, shall I be mother?
Yeah, why don't you give it a go?
Yes, well, I'm sorry. It's not a 48-ounce T-bone steak with truffle fries, but there we go. Some of us don't want coronary heart attacks.
It's nice, Ma. It's nice.
There's quite a lot of shot in the pigeon, so mind how you go or you'll crack a tooth. And the shot can take a bit of feather in, too.
Hmm. Shot and feather.
Well, and also the contempt that she clearly had for American excess. You know, this is not a, what would you rather have, a 96-ounce ribeye with truffle fries?
Just, truffle fries, you know, yeah.
I would rather have that. Yeah.
And I do like a bit of pigeon, but...
But the truffle fries are a sick burn. They're like, what is more basic billionaire than truffle fries?
That's true.
It's like, yeah, no,
they're pretty basic.
Right.
Yeah, basic billionaire or basic dozenaire.
What did you think about, speaking of parents who don't love their children, the move that Logan pulled with Kendall, forcing him to go back to, you know, to visit the parents?
He pulls move after move. Like, first of all, he's like, you need to sort of come with me to the house. And then that's the point at which Kendall goes from being a vaguely self-respecting number two who's come back from the broken robot of episode one to just completely falling apart in front of your eyes. And then he just pushes it even further because he's Logan and then forces him to go into the house. And that kind of gratuitous cruelty I think we're seeing more and more of the gratuitously cruel Logan in this season and the way that he just messes with his kids because he can.
Well, and I think that there was an interesting almost building up of Kendall in the first part of the episode. You know, we see him look more human and normal. I mean, what's more human and normal for a, you know, early 40s man than to send a dick pic to the woman he's trying
to... Okay, can I just ask with? About this? Because I am old and I kind of predate the era of dick pics. But like... Is it normal for someone, for like a woman to really beg some guy to send her a dick pic?
I mean, you're here
I'm not sure we're the right audience to answer that question.
I feel like the
two lesbians and a married lady.
Extreme lesbian.
Heterosexual
Jasmine,
married lady.
Jasmine,
you know?
Can you help us?
I was like, no. Oh, he's not on the Wi-Fi. Like, why is it so broken up, that phone call? And like, he has to take a picture and send
billionaires
it to her.
Can't
like,
afford
what,
Wi-Fi.
Like,
yeah.
You know, what's happening?
That's so
what's
true, though. The episode starts with a very pumped up Kendall literally showing his dick to his new fancy girlfriend and ends with him in a very bad place.
Well, and there was this great line. And, you know, you don't often get funny lines from Kendall, but there was this great line where he says, and he seems to almost have trouble getting it out, and he's surprised that he's being funny. But he says, what are we, an octopus giving reach arounds to every fish on the reef now? And, you know, when the suggestion is that they go to the UK, and I thought, oh, this is very un-Kendall.
Yeah.
No, but that
was so true.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It was very Romany.
It was a very Roman line.
Brandino,
and I was like, ooh,
porn.
Kendall's feeling himself, you know?
Yeah.
And it's almost like seeing that his, I mean, I think it's to me, there's something really meaningful in the fact that it's after he discovers that that after Logan discovers that Kendall had spent the night with Naomi Pierce,
right?
That's when
it was
he
clearly
decides,
he was angry. He slams the door behind her. He kicks her out. He slams the door behind her. He's like, okay, now we need to brainstorm. He needs to make sure that his son doesn't get to, you know, sit in a rowboat with Regent's Park with.
In a Simon and Garfunkel song.
It did seem like a total reaction to seeing Naomi that just pissed him off so much. And he later calls Kendall cuntstruck.
Yes.
Which I thought was
Is, you know, I mean, talk about projection, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of reasons to believe that Logan is a bit cuntstruck himself.
We got to get into that.
Calling Kendall black.
Can I also just mention one of my favorite billionaire lines in the episode, which is when Naomi walks in and Kendall goes, she was in Venice for the Biennale, so it was easy for her to pop over. I mean, once you're in Europe anyway, right?
Yeah, it's just like hop on a plane or something.
Hop on the G50.
Get on a Vaporetti and go to the airport, yeah.
So this whole relationship between Logan and Rhea, which has been a bit mysterious up until now, is still mysterious, but maybe is coming into a bit more focus.
Yeah.
Are they having sex?
It's never quite spelled out. And even if they're not, I was very impressed on how Rhea used it with Shiv.
That
as
was
a point
so
of
evil.
Whoa. It was, it's almost more powerful if they're not actually having sex. But the fact that they didn't spell it out, I thought was an interesting narrative choice.
Well, look, I don't know what to say. I just like you, and I, your father's a very appealing man, and I hope...
No, it's fine. It's good to check before you fuck someone's dad. do due diligence, your paperwork. Do I need to sign, like, a release form, or...?
I feel like a total idiot, so congratulations.
No, you shouldn't. It's...
No, because you play your cards pretty close.
Oh, who says I have cards?
But you okay?
Honestly, no. I feel like a flame-roasted, wood-fired dipshit. Yeah, I did the thing that I said I was never gonna do, and... now I don't know. I don't know.
And Rhea, I mean, we all agree that Rhea is having sex or not having sex with Logan simply because she wants to be the next CEO of Waystar Royco. Like, that's where her head is at. This is like, she is like Dick Cheney-ing him right
now. No, totally. She's pulling a Dick Cheney exactly what, like, I wrote in my notes.
Because by the end of the episode,
he's like, I could come up with a shortlist of two or three.
Oh, you know what? I couldn't find anyone except I really fit the bill for this.
Well, it's clearly it's pretty obvious to both of them that they're talking about her and she's just, you know.
They're just sort of playing a role. But I think it was very striking to me that Logan seemed sort of weak, out of it, not very sharp in their late night conversations. Like, it was almost like he was making himself, either intentionally or this is just the situation that he finds himself in, he's making himself vulnerable to this person who's clearly a shark. I mean, she picks right up on it and runs with it. But I was really struck with that scene when they're having whiskeys in the house in London, where he, you know, is essentially kind of begging for her help. And, you know, she sort of says, oh, well, you want me to try and fix that for you.
And the way the plan that she comes up with is so weirdly evil and also weirdly improbable. I mean, I have to say that there are bits of, like, this sort of middle bit of season two where I'm like, okay, I'm having a couple of issues here with the writing, like
the verisimilitude,
the plotting or something, like, isn't the idea that Logan could install his daughter as CEO of Pierce, which is the company that he wants to buy, like, it would be so easy to paint that as something which she was doing for him, for his sake, and like would be great for him. And like, somehow it doesn't occur to Shiv to try and pull that move. Instead, she just kind of bursts into tears and goes, oh, no, I've been double-crossed by Rhea. It's like, huh.
I found the way that Shiv just crumpled after that final confrontation with Logan to not be particularly believable for her character. But it also could be trying to illustrate the point that Rhea was making, was that she's not as smart as she thinks she is. And that there is this, you know... this incredible magical power that her father has over her, that in a way that she can, you know, a couple of great lines where she basically says, I've put myself in a position that I never wanted to be in, which is waiting around for my father's approval or permission or whatever. And she's clearly lived her whole life never wanting to be in that place. And she's played herself and she's right where he wants it.
Which is exactly.
This whole season has really been, this is Shiv's storyline. It's like she came back in and slowly her bullying father has chipped away at her ego, at her self-confidence, so that like the Shiv who said, I'm Shiv fucking Roy last season is like gone and got snookered by Rhea. Whereas like that season one Shiv maybe wouldn't have. She was smarter. She was more on the ball and thinking. And by the time you get to this episode and she's chasing her father literally around the globe, she's kind of like wrecked. It reminds me of like women I speak to who've been like sexually discriminated against. And by the end of it all, they're like, maybe I'm not that smart. Maybe like my 3 Harvard degrees didn't mean anything. Blah, blah, blah.
She's been gaslit by her father.
Yes, she totally has.
But this is also the Murdoch parallels, right? Like, yeah. All of the Murdoch kids at some point or another, you know, left the family company, decided they were going to do something on their own because they didn't want to be competing for their father's affection and for senior jobs within, you know, Rupert's company. And they all wind up coming in one way or another and, you know, probably against their better judgment. It's clearly one of the more Murdoch-y parts of the show.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Well, when we were talking about this on the walk down, Candy, the one person here who has really no exposure to media, Twitter, except adjacent to me and doesn't follow these things. I mean, why would someone who doesn't care about media watch this show?
Yeah.
Oh. Proximity. Lydia started watching it. I watched a couple of episodes and I was like, I can't watch this. Everyone is horrible, right? The news is horrible. People on the news are horrible. I try to limit my exposure. And so I stopped watching, you know, around episode 3. Of season one. And then she had it on and I was in the other room. I was like, it was episode 6 or 7. I was like, wow, what's happening? and I started paying attention and then I had to go back and rewatch because I don't know. I was like, these people are horrible. I can't not look at them. These people, like, the similarities between our current, like, Murdochs with, it's just mind-blowing. But I can't figure them out because to me now I watch as as someone fascinated with a really fucked up family.
Yeah.
More than anything, right? And like, the interchange between the kids and the, like, that to me is the most interesting part.
Mm-hmm. And the universality of that. I mean, you know, like, to me, the sort of final dagger was there's clearly this battle going on between Logan and Caroline is the mother's name.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, you know, these elephants and the children of the grass. And, you know, her final twist of the knife is to force the kids to go back to Logan and say, would you rather give me your, you know, estate in the Hamptons that I don't even want or like, or $20 million, but you give up the kids. And, you know, it's clear that it was not even a moment's hesitation for Logan.
He's like, oh, yeah, you go back to your mom's for Christmas.
They're adult children. Like, how does the divorce settlement involve, like, who gets to spend Christmas with the adult children? That's just mind-boggling
become increasingly infantilized over the course of both seasons, actually. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we saw that most of all with Kendall in this episode where he spends most of the episode looking like he's about 5 and about to burst into tears. But all of them just become increasingly infantilized by the closer they become to their father and even to their mother. And they can never grow up. They can never leave the roles that they've been in all their lives.
I guess if this was a quote unquote normal unloved children of horrible unloving parents, they would have left and not had anything to do with them, but the money is the string that keeps them tethered together.
And someone like Rhea really seems to buy into this infantilizing narrative. Like, she's also infantilizing them pretty consistently, right? With the Shiv saying, you know, I know what it's like, and fake feminists, like, I know what it's like to fight your way up through this industry. And she has this whole, I don't know if she's, you know, really into Greek tragedies, but like she makes two statements that are very, you know, kind of outsized, right? Like when Roman comes back and, you know, like, oh, you better stab your eyes out. Like, you know, he's like Oedipus.
He fucked over mom.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's trying to like both elevate them in their minds, but also ironically cut them down.
It's interesting that you picked up on the theater thing, because that's why on the tragedy thing, because that's why Rhea was there, right? Allegedly to go see theater in London.
Right. Just to see some theater.
And she just caught a ride with Logan.
I want to talk a little bit about the weird rehabilitation of Roman over the past few episodes. Like, he was always the toddler with a hard on, right? Mm-hmm. He was the joke kid, right? But now, like, you actually have Jerry pulling him aside and saying, look, if you were serious about that whole power sharing thing, and like actually kind of taking him seriously. And you had this line on the private jet between Rhea and Logan where Rhea is talking about the different kids. And she says, quote, Roman could actually be good, but nowhere near right now. And it seems like after making Roman this, you know, caricature joke for like 1.5 seasons, now they're trying to sort of say, oh, maybe there's this wild card in the mix and it could actually be Roman, even though we all just like looked at Roman and took one look at him and went, there's no way it can be Roman.
Right.
They're adding in this weird, bizarre option. And that feels a bit wrong to me, too. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it does and it doesn't. I mean, Roman to me has always seemed to be the one who's just completely without any sort of scruple or morals. And totally. I think that that's what's required to be as ruthless as Logan Roy. And so, you know, to the outside world, he has qualities that would seem to be disqualifying. And, you know, I mean, I loved the Malala Roy line, you know, because it's clear that this memo that Shiv had written had just landed with such an enormous thud, you know, and the way that it gets ruthlessly mocked on the plane is extraordinary.
But also the way that the conversation between Shiv and Tom when they're entering Logan's apartment, and she's talking about how she was, you know, presumably wanting to move ATN a little bit towards the center. And she's like very defensive about this. And she's like, I'm saying follow the ad revenue. And Tom replies and he says, sure. I think the cynicism was pretty clear.
It's clear even Tom didn't like her memo, right? He keeps saying like, why didn't you show it to me? Like, why? It seemed to me that the implication was this memo was a clunker. It had an Amelia Earhart quote in it, which...
Thomas Aquinas and Amelia Earhart. And lots of photos of multiracial children.
And Roman's wonderful line about it warmed even my racist heart.
I think there's some truth to that. Roman has the total lack of morality and the other two sort of have something stuck in them that is a little bit moral.
Roman was the one who wanted to shut down Valter, right?
Yeah, he didn't care about shutting down Valter. And then that move he did in season one where his current girlfriend, I forget her name, the curly blonde hair, he's like...
Is that Tiffany?
No.
Holly, maybe?
No.
No, I think Holly is Connor's wife, her girlfriend.
Well, anyway, she was the one who, you know, had a thing with Tom scams.
Oh.
Right? And
then
it was like very much a Logan-esque kind of power play to like, he has now his girlfriend, he has her, and she has this thing over his sister, you know, that she gave a blowjob to Tom Wamsgans. And now he's brought her into the circle just to sort of lord it over him. I mean, there's a very Logan-y kind of move, I think.
I also think that, and this is going to sound really weird, but I think Roman has a kind of self-control that both Shiv and Kendall do not have, right? Kendall is an addict. He clearly has, you know, brought enormous embarrassment to his father from his behavior. And Shiv has clearly shown herself to have this impulsive, emotional, I mean, these all sound like very gendered terms, but this is certainly the way that it's portrayed, you know, that she had done a really good job of controlling and cloaking her ambition to run her father's company. company, but, you know, has played her hand and played it badly. And Roman, in a weird way, I mean, clearly the guy does drugs, but not an addict or doesn't appear to be an addict. You know, his sexual behavior is weird, but not in a way that is, I mean, I thought it was telling that the dirt that,
Cherry
is digging up, you know.
It's like, did your personal trainer like wank you off at the end of your training sessions?
I mean, that's pretty, you know, mild stuff, given the standards of
the day.
It's
not manslaughter.
It's not manslaughter, right?
Exactly.
So in a weird way,
although,
and
the weird thing is that he is actually guilty of manslaughter. This is the whole thing from season one, right? He actually blew up that rocket and killed
a bunch
of people.
Someone just lost a thumb or something.
Yeah.
but he doesn't care. Like, it doesn't actually penetrate his dermis whatsoever. Yeah.
Mm. But it's also, I mean, that's the difference between, you know, one death is a tragedy and, you know, it's you know, if you blow up a rocket through negligence, that's a very different thing in corporate America than it is to literally drive. So, you know, although Kendall wasn't driving. But literally leave someone to drown in a car because you're high off your
I think he
rocket.
Was driving, wasn't he? He was.
Oh, was Kendall driving?
Yeah, he was driving.
Oh. Yeah, we were revisiting the accident and trying to piece together what exactly. We should have rewatched that.
Kendall, yeah, and then Kendall coming back in the middle of the night and shoving a couple hundred pounds through the
letterbox?
Yeah, how much did he shove through
that?
That
it did not seem like that much money. Yeah.
I thought it was amazing. Like, he didn't even have an envelope. It's like, what kind of guy goes, he just went to the ATM and took out all his daily limit, maybe, and threw it in the mail slot.
Have we seen the end of that storyline?
No.
No. Right?
I assume it comes back.
Okay.
Maybe in season three.
Hello, I'm Imi Harper. On the Slow Newscast from Tortoise, I tell the story of how a Hong Kong billionaire was silenced.
I got bombs thrown into my house. I got people came here, ransacked my computer. And I got people fracturing me, I got this and that, but I'm safe.
And what it reveals about the freedoms Hong Kong no longer enjoys. Listen to Hong Kong's Rebel Billionaire on the Slow Newscast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, I had a question about Sandy. It was Sandy, right? The guy who runs the tabloids who did the story.
Yeah.
About
who may or may not have syphilis.
The drowning.
Yeah.
Is it supposed to be like a Murdoch and, the other guy, the Zuckerman?
Zuckerman.
Oh, is it supposed to be like more Murdoch and Zuckerman? Is Sandy supposed to be like Zuckerman?
More Zuckerman or maybe like...
and had tabloid war with.
Or maybe like Robert Maxwell or one of those other media barons.
Okay. Yeah, I needed to know that. Thank you.
Because he owns a rival tabloid in the UK. So it could be like Lord Rothermere.
So I guess the episode also, so it leaves the manslaughter storyline kind of still hanging around. And then we also have sort of the continuation of the Cruise storyline, where is this now this internal investigation going on? And he thinks it's going to be just like slipping into a warm bubble bath.
Putting on the Eagles and playing with himself.
Yes. Thank you.
And Logan starts off the episode turning to Marsha and saying, all the Cruise noise is a fucking nothing burger, which clearly it isn't.
It's clearly not a nothing burger, but, I was struck, and Candy, you had mentioned this, that the Greg and Tom scenes didn't really work for me. They didn't have the same sort of
same
like,
bite
and spark.
As the Greg and Tom scenes normally have.
Yeah.
They're a great double act normally.
Totally. I think that when I say that the show is queer, it's like, this is such a, the Greg and Tom thing is like so performative, masculinity, performance. It's like, he's going to light these papers on fire and it's like, hold my beer, dude. Like, what is that guy, like, what is he trying to be? You know, what is he trying to say?
Yeah, and that thing where he actually says, like, if you don't do this, I will break your legs. It's like, Tom has never and could never and will never break anyone's leg. And the only person who would even dream that that was a credible threat is Greg.
Right.
It's not personal. I just can't trust you. So in a friendly way, I'm staying here tonight. And I'm going to travel in with you tomorrow. And I'm going to go with you to wherever you have the papers. And then later, together...
Dude.
We're going to dispose of them off premises. And if you squeal or you try to take copies, I'll break your legs.
And Greg's like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, like that whole, Yeah. You know, he's trying to just have like a wine and cheese party at his house and, you know.
And what was that, like some weird like third way progressive talking shop thing that
it seemed more about like self-actualization than politics. That was my, I forget exactly what it was called, but.
Renewal something?
The renewal, yeah. It felt to me more like a kind of like young corporates, you know. Like
we're planning what did they say? The welcome to the next generation, welcome to the third wave or something.
They're trying to elevate the world's consciousness, just like WeWork. Yeah,
with business, with money.
Yeah.
So, but let's stick on this for a minute since you're here and this is the candy thesis. Explain the candy thesis of Succession being a deeply queer show.
I just, you know, first of all, I am like a total Jerry Roman stan. I think that's really. I just feel like fanfic is there. You know, there has to be some Jerry Roman fanfic. And that Roman, like, he's a kinky guy. And that's what has kind of yet to be fully explored. It's been sort of hinted at. And he loves to be humiliated. And that makes complete sense, right? We see why.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. We see why with, you know, Logan, who for him, love and fear are the same thing for, you know, his interaction with, you know, all the kids, which makes you think, you know, they've been hit before, right? It's not a one-time thing. And the queerness between of what Roman seems to be actualizing with Jerry, but with, you know, even the being, you know, jerked off by the trainer, it's like, wow, that's your thing. And we know it's probably not because we have yet to see him
actually have a physical sexual encounter with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think like there's a real kind of queerness in the relationship between Tom and Greg.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, the water throwing, you know, wanting that fidelity
right.
from him in
Completely.
The safe room episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think to me, that's what it is. Because there are no, quote, queer people in the show, right?
I find
them all. They're all like role playing. They're all, you know, Jerry has this like very two-sided way of being, right? Like very super masculine in her assertiveness, but she is always dressed in this like kind of bizarrely matronly way. And we only glimpse her sexiness when she's talking to someone like Roman.
I felt like even in this episode where they really didn't interact that much, they still had a real chemistry. Like he looks at her with a soft, like when they were talking, she was saying she was gonna, you know, have private investigators investigate him. He looks at her with this very soft, loving look now, and they have this real chemistry. And I think she said in an interview that even in season one, they were telling her to kind of amp up the chemistry with Roman. Like they were planning it all along, which I think is fascinating.
And then, of course, Connor is just deeply dysfunctional.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all dysfunctional, but like Connor's this kind of weird thing where he finds himself some hooker who like doesn't make none
He's
of it makes sense.
Playwright who they've all got, but you see it all come out in this in their the examples of intimate relationships that they have seen in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that those are your role models for how you live your life. And you know, getting to spend more time with their mother, I think, was really, really revealing, just to get a sense of how character is formed and then distorted by money. Because I think you're right that if these were normal kids, they would just have gone off to college and, like, found their own lives and moved on.
Had their own children to abuse.
Yeah. I mean, Kendall has children, but you never see them and you never, you know.
Well, he tries to hug them in episode one and fails.
Yeah, he's just, you know, I mean, their ability to achieve any kind of intimacy, all of them, you know, with one another as siblings, you know, parent to child, you know, with romantic partners, they're all just like so broken. And, you know, for me, this was actually the least funny and bleakest episode of Succession.
Although Boar on the Floor was pretty bleak.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it was also funny. And I felt like the thing that was missing in this episode, and I think it was probably intentional,
was the comedy.
And I think that the Greg and Tom scenes were probably rightly not that funny because the thing that they're talking about is actually horrific. You know, I mean, this there's been this massive cover-up of you know, sexual abuse and you know, perhaps even murders of workers on this cruise ship. So I feel like this episode went to some very, very dark places.
I think literally dark. I mean, I think the way it looked was, especially that scene with Kendall and Logan in the car going to visit the family. It's all blues and purples and the visuals in the show are completely, there was nothing warm. There were no warm colors in, I would say, 80% of the
finally the visual artist on the show that can talk about these things.
Yeah. No, but it's true. When Kendall returns to the house in the dark of night to push the money through the slot, and then he goes back to his mother and he tries to have that like unburden himself to his mom of all people, and it's very dark and it's
quite difficult, these things are they quite difficult, because you know I'm very tired, Felix, and I don't think I can talk.
And then she does do it over an egg.
And then she does this thing where you have this like emotionally stunted, a great English character actor playing like an emotionally stunted person who can't really come to terms with themselves, getting embarrassed in the middle of the night and then leaving in the morning by leaving a note on the table is, can I just say that's Withnail and I? Which, I mean, I don't know how many listeners of the Slate Money Succession recap podcast are like Withnail fans, but it's the greatest movie of all time and it's straight out of Withnail.
Huh. I've never seen it.
Same.
Also, to show how closed off this woman is, Shiv asks her, so, how are you? And she gets mad.
She's like, oh, are we going to go into all that? Yeah.
She gets mad. That's a big theme of this episode is no one wants to talk about anything. She doesn't want to say how she is. She doesn't want to hear the difficult things. Roman doesn't even want his father to apologize for hitting him. Like, he doesn't want to even talk about it. That's how closed off emotionally these people are.
Yeah, nobody wants to connect. I mean, to me, with withholding, and, you know, perhaps this is just my interest in Freud and related things, but, you know, the like literally not nourishing is, I think, just starving.
Okay, so wait, can I just jump in here? Because this is my favorite random thing that I just learned this week. So you know how Logan calls Roman Romulus?
Yes.
Right? Romulus, of course, is famously raised by wolves or a wolf. Okay, I don't know how many like Roman history nerds are. Do you know what the name of the wolf who suckled Romulus and Remus was?
Rhea?
No.
I'm kidding.
No, Rhea was their mother.
Oh, that's right. I knew that that was the...
Wow. Rhea was the mother of Romulus and Remus.
Whoa.
Yeah. And the name of the wolf, this is my favorite little random fact, right? The name of the wolf who suckled Romulus and Remus was Looper, which is the name of James Murdoch's private investment company.
Whoa.
Oh, wow. That's quite an Easter egg.
No, there's a lot. I mean, I notice Roman is eating constantly in this episode. In the plane, he's having honeydew of all things.
Mm-hmm. Of all things.
Candy,
when we were watching it,
looks like a nice melon.
Candy turned to me and she's like, he's rich. Why is he eating honeydew?
Josh Barrow would disapprove.
The worst fruit.
It's the worst
what?
Fruit.
A good honeydew is delicious. The problem is it's often very, very bad.
That's a different podcast.
Maybe it was.
I could go deep
maybe,
on that.
Maybe it was like Japanese honeydew. Right. Yeah.
Special honeydew.
Oh, yeah.
It's like billionaire honeydew. But billionaire honeydew tastes better.
He is eating all the time. What's up with that?
Don't know.
He needs his eggy pegs.
And he's like but I mean, maybe it's that he's feeding himself, right? And I like, and this is to sort of further your theory, right? That this notion that Roman is somehow able to get his needs met and therefore doesn't lash out. He doesn't become an addict. He doesn't, you know, expose himself in the way that Shiv did with the Pierces. Mm-hmm. And that he can somehow nourish himself and take care of himself in a way that the other children kind of can't.
Mm-hmm. He's like this wild animal raised by
Wolves.
And therefore
can take care of himself.
The wiliest one.
And maybe he'll wind up founding Rome.
Maybe. Oh, another thing I need to just tell you is that Logan doesn't wear a seatbelt.
I noticed that.
That was a very deliberate choice in all the car scenes. The kids have one on and he's like, fuck it. Yeah. No seatbelt.
Yeah. Now it's coming back to me. I didn't notice this at the time, but was he sitting in the back of the car with his suit buttoned done up?
Yes. Oh.
Why would you do that?
Well, it wasn't a suit. It was more of
a coat. A coat, yeah.
Yeah, it was more of a coat.
But when you sit down, you unbutton your button. That's like, what? Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
I felt that this episode was the frailest and least powerful that Logan looked.
He was running away from his daughter the entire episode. Yeah. I mean, when he turns around and goes, I've never run away from anyone. We've just seen you run away from your daughter in like three different situations.
And he's clearly leaning on Rhea, right? I mean, he's kind of found,
not Marcia.
Definitely not Marcia.
Because they have that little scene on the steps at the beginning, and then he like abandons his wife. You know, this has been my like running theme through this podcast. It's like, Marcia,
where's Marcia?
Marcia seems to have been forgotten.
Marcia. She's done. Right? I mean,
he's thrown
onto
her
Rhea
over
now.
To Rhea. Yeah.
But I think we're going to come back around to Marcia because there's just too much there. You know, the investment in character development that they've expended on her in the Turnhaven episode, that's got to come back around somehow.
Also, I feel like they laid out the numbers for us pretty well. So now we know they own, 34%?
They have 36%.
And then
Mom has another 3%. And then this mysterious Ulsterman has
4%. That fat bastard.
Who is the mysterious Ulsterman in Cheltenham? Do we know anything about the Ulsterman?
We just know he has a big appetite.
And apparently Caroline can help.
Caroline.
She'll throw
what
that
does
in.
That
for,
mean?
She'll throw that in for free.
Yeah, if you give me your three children for Christmas, then I'll give you the Ulsterman.
And $20 million.
And $20 million, yeah. Which is, you know.
But I feel like they were breaking down the, couldn't Marcia, team up with the Roy children and, leverage their shares? It's 36% if they all stick together, but I don't know how much Logan
the whole plot of season one, right? Was that Kendall was going to take his shares and vote them with Stewie.
Right.
And,
yep.
So, yeah, the kids vote their own shares, but everyone assumes that the kids are going to stick with Logan, which I think is a reasonable assumption.
I'm waiting for Shiv to rise up.
One of the interesting things I noticed about the negotiation around the dining room table with Mum was that we saw the original conversation between Logan and Roman, where Logan is like, offer 10, but I'll go up as high as 50, but don't go as high as 50 because I'll be very annoyed. And then Roman comes out. He says, well, he said to offer 10, but he'll go up as high as 40. And Mum immediately knows, oh, well, so you mean 50, right? And he's like, no. And she says,
you're bad at this.
She says, you're bad at this. She knew exactly what was happening. And Shiv knew exactly what was happening. And Shiv was like, Roman doesn't even know the real number. Like, he could go up to 200. Mm-hmm. Roman has no idea what the real number is. Both Siobhan and her mother have a better idea of how Logan operates than Roman does. Mm. Mm. So I don't think Roman is ready to take over.
So where are we going next? I mean, are we building up to Rhea becoming CEO and taking everything over? Is there going to be some kind of counter move by the Roy children?
The big thing is the public naming of the successor, right?
Right. That's the driving everything.
Because that was part of when they have that little video which is sent out and they're like corporate governance, blah, blah, blah. And he hasn't named a successor. They're really pushing this MacGuffin, you know.
But I think that my prediction, and I generally try to avoid predictions, but I feel as though Logan is playing for time, and the Rhea Gambit is part of playing for time. I don't think that it means that he's made up his mind that he's not going to name one of his children as his successor, but just as he used Rhea to put off Shiv and give him an excuse to get out of it. I mean, I think he says, you know, thanks for getting that noose off from around my neck. You know, I think that this toying with Rhea is also a way for him to kind of vamp a bit and keep playing for more time. I personally would be very surprised if he left the company, if he named a successor who was not one of his children. But, you know, I guess anything can happen.
And is he literally playing for time, for his life, essentially, because if he's not running this company, he might as well be dead. And he's now in his 80s, and it's just like a fight against time, basically. That's kind of dark.
I support that. I think that's right.
Now I feel sad. Someone cheer me up. Give me a good line.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I don't know what my favorite line is. I think just in terms of sheer sort of Iannucci, you know, over the topness, that bit about Greg, you're a criminal mastermind. What polyglot genius could ever hope to crack your impenetrable code? Was pretty good.
Secret.
I felt like this episode was not as rich in great lines, in part because it was not rich with humor.
Right.
It felt like
the best lines are the funny lines, right?
The best lines are the funny lines. And there were some that, you know, as someone who works in media, particularly in digital media, you know, made me wince. Like when Rhea said, the next Zucker fucker comes along and swallows you whole, shits you out as an app. And I was like, ooh, close to the bone.
You would never.
I don't know if you guys saw this, but when Naomi is leaving and he's asking, and Logan's asking after the cousins and, you know, Nan and everything, he gives her a subtle finger.
What? Really?
Yeah.
He totally flips her the bird.
He says, give him my fucking best or something like that, you know, and then he sort of scratches his face in this way.
Oh, God, that's
he's like
so
totally giving her the bird. And it was a great visual joke.
So it was a gesture instead of a line.
But that's
good. That was an amazing scene.
I like
he wouldn't even say like hello to her. Totally. That was, he just iced her out like a child.
Harsh.
I was kind of impressed by that because even when I hate someone, I'll be like, hi, how are you?
Especially when you hate someone.
Yeah.
You need to be full on billionaire to be openly
to be like, fuck
dismissive
off
of the people you hate.
No, it's
but
true.
He loves to be hated also, right?
He
relishes
the whole plan big with people who hate you.
Yes.
You know, hate and love. What's the difference?
He definitely gets off on it. I mean, Roman had some good lines this episode, the humor question notwithstanding, in the plane when he says, Roy Boy's on tour. We got him in all sizes, large, medium, and cuck.
That was my line. Now I got to find another
one. Another queer.
Another queer reference.
Yeah. I mean, that's not super that queer, but it's a little queer.
The other good Roman line, which I feel like sums up the whole episode, was in the beginning when he says to Shiv, are your nips hard? They must be because you are so out in the cold.
The line that sticks with me, because of how rare it is at the end when Roman comes back to Logan and manages to get him off with a mere $20 million onto the divorce settlement, and he pats him on the cheek and he goes, good boy, good boy. Like he's a dog.
And he likes it.
And
Roman
he loves
was happy.
It. Yeah. And it's like literally the best thing to happen to Roman in probably a decade.
They play out this whole, I mean, I feel like I'm not a child of divorce, but it instantly seems like this is what the children of divorce deal with for their whole lives. The parents are fighting over and they use them as pawns. And at the end of the day, the kids know how to work that whole system to get the praise that they want. Like when Logan was laughing, when they were making fun of how little food the mom serves, like Kendall and Roman both started smiling too because they were so happy to make him laugh.
Right.
And then, sick dynamic.
And then Logan is like laughing at Roman's jokes when they're talking about Shiv's memo.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's when they're most happiest is when they're like just stabbing each other
they're
in the back.
They're able to bond over stabbing.
Okay. We're putting the concept of Siobhan on the table for general discussion here?
You're tearing apart my sister's pious bullshit for your entertainment? I had a dream like this once.
It's just good to air some views. Mm.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think the twin quotes from Thomas Aquinas and Amelia Earhart really kick us off with a bang.
Wow, so many pictures. All the smiling children, all the various hues, that melted the heart of even this hardened racist.
This isn't a funny moment, but one that really stuck out to me that I found incredibly poignant is when Kendall washes his water glass and dries it and in the home of the young man who died. That to me, I was like, wow.
I also, I fixated on that too, because you never see them doing anything remotely like that, cleaning, cooking, anything. And this is the first time he's like wiping the glass with the rag and it's so sad.
Yeah. Ugh.
You see, he has feelings.
Well, but it's funny. It's a water glass, right? How dirty could it be?
Right. That's what I thought too. Yeah, I would have just rinsed it.
Is that like a Lady Macbeth thing?
Oh, that's what I was going to say. I mean, coming back to Candy's point about Oedipus and about, you know, the tragedy references, definitely thinking of Macbeth and trying to, or just trying to remove his DNA, which would presumably not be relevant.
But Logan definitely ties him, like, that's the whole point, right, of taking him. He's tied completely now to the family.
He really
thoroughly
is.
Internally and externally.
I mean, that's what Logan says to him. We should stick together on this. You know, that's exactly
the
what he
face
says.
That so Emily is making. Right. Here. Emily, yeah, Logan is a nasty piece
he's
of work.
He's a bad dad.
Bad
dude.
Bad mom. It's a bit late for home truths, isn't it?
That's a good line.
That was
that
a very
is
good,
a good
line.
Line.
Yeah.
Candy, did you say your line?
Oh, that was
just the finger.
There were so many lines. I have to say, the whole like clam, you know, you go to the mom says, go to the Hamptons house to have clam bakes with people who hate him. that to me is so revealing on so many levels about the dynamics between them, but also who Logan is in his core, which is a horrible person who can't differentiate and doesn't want to differentiate between love and fear and all the, you know, he has no emotional barometer.
Well, he literally says that at the beginning of the episode, right?
Love,
when he's
fear.
Standing with Marcia, he says, love, fear, whatever. She says, they still love you. And he says, love, fear, whatever. So that was a good framing moment. The other thing that related to the clam bakes, you know, his former wife is clearly very posh, right?
She is about as posh as
peak
it can.
Posh, right?
Most and, posh, ultra
and,
posh.
In that, you know, and the sort of echo with the Pierces in that, right?
Mm-hmm. But it's a very different. It's not.
It's a
not
very
waspy
different.
Posh.
No, it's not waspy posh. It's not American posh. But it's like of lands that he has conquered, posh lands that he's conquered, and different types of poshness.
The weird thing that struck me is that these three kids are all English. I mean, they all have an English mom. They're obviously all like deeply familiar with England and the ways thereof, but they also all seem to just find it completely alien and strange. There's like, as someone who, you know, my mother was German, I go to Germany a lot and I feel, you know, a little bit German. I'm not 100% comfortable there, but I don't treat it like this bizarre, strange country which is completely alien to me, in the way that, you know, Shiv and Roman are like walking around the grocery store going, what is this strange thing?
Strange wartime food museum for wartime foods.
I thought they were just being rich kids that don't go into like
they never go to
basic
stores, right?
Stores like that, you know.
No, I agree, but I think that to me that really pointed to like how firmly they had chosen sides, right? And it's not like their father's American, but his life is originally American.
But this is the difference with the murder, right, who all are quite happily both American and Australian at the same time and embrace both sides.
Felix, how posh do you have to be to serve pigeon with buckshot in it? That's super posh. I mean, you have to be really posh to get away with that, I would think.
Yeah. So.
Or unposh. I don't know.
You would be surprised how, like, easy it is to wind up getting served a piece of meat with shot in it in England, because because it's, I mean, in it actually is the right way to organize society, is that if you kill animals then you eat them. That's what you should do when you kill an animal. And in the United States, if you shoot an animal, you are allowed to eat it yourself, but you're not allowed to sell it to anyone. In England, you can shoot an animal and sell it to the butcher, who will sell it at the market. And so it's not,
that's all they'll be eating soon, right?
It's
after
not,
Brexit.
Exactly. It's not an ultra posh thing, but the idea of, like, if you haven't seen your kids in years and they're coming over and then you're like, it has some shot in it. And the shot might have, like, passed through a feather as it was going in. So there might be a little bit of a feather inside. You're like, oh.
Oh, the other thing that I noticed about that scene was, she doesn't offer them any wine. She brings the bottle of wine in. Her glass is still half full. There appears to be wine in the bottle that's sitting on the table. But she goes and gets another bottle and puts it right next to herself and doesn't pass it around. It was just kind of an amazing moment.
Yeah, I thought she had finished an entire bottle of wine by herself, because they show the kids' glasses and they're empty.
She's
drunk.
The kids have wine glasses. They're just not drinking for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And
that's Kendall's thing.
They're not drinking?
Drinking.
Oh, drinking. Yeah. Or both. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's just, I mean, she's so gloriously watchable. the map of it. Like, you can't.
Another older lady to put into the collection.
It is. It's just like, it's the most fabulous. Like, you wrote that wonderful article about all of the amazing, like, you know, especially season two. It's all about the women.
About these powerful older
women. We'll see what happens with Rhea, though. Will she be powerful by the end?
Tune in
next week.
I'm really excited to see what happens with Rhea, because she has emerged as a villain to rival Logan.
Absolutely.
My God,
she's the only one. She's the only one who can be as who can see as many moves ahead, who can be as cunning. Although even she completely stepped in it with Nan and wound up, having the garden, smash up into her face.
I mean, Holly Hunter is just such an incredible actress, because Shiv is buying what she's dishing out, but you could also see watching her that it's totally fake, right? Yeah. I mean, totally disingenuous. Just something
she's like, I really,
so smarmy
that bit
about
where
her.
She's like, I think I want to sleep with your dad, basically. And you're like, ooh. And she would do that just to sort of do a favor for Logan.
Right.
I mean, it's so
skeevy. Well, my one hope for the next episode is that it be a little bit more fun.
More jokes. Yeah, because
Bring
back
Connor. Where's Connor been?
Where's Connor? Yeah. How's his presidential campaign going?
Take us to Iowa or something.
Yeah. What's the title of the next episode, Jessamine? Because this is what Taffy says, right? Is you can...
There's clues in the title. I mean, although if I'd seen Argestes...
Yeah, Argestes, who knows what Argestes...
Right. P.S. Someone who works at HuffPost has spotted an Argestes t-shirt out in the wild.
Whoa.
So if anyone knows anything about Argestes logoed t-shirts, I would like to know about it. So please email us.
Yeah, I mean, I've made some of my richest media contacts at Argestes.
As a non-media person, that was a really... I kept asking Lydia, I was like, is that real? Like, what's it based on? The whole vest culture?
The vests are real. The vests are very real.
Very problematic. Yeah, that was a little bit... Talk about visual. I was like, oh, too many vests. very vest
$75 cops.
All right, Jessamine.
Done deal.
That was mentioned in the context of Logan's itinerary. When he had to change his itinerary and suddenly fly to London, and they were like, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, they said something about, and then we'll just do Dundee after that, and then Christchurch. But you cannot get two cities further away from each other than Dundee and Christchurch. They literally are on opposite sides of the planet.
Hmm.
I'm assuming this is the Scottish Dundee.
I would think so.
But that's not going to be the Ulsterman. Because he's down in Cheltenham.
I want to see the Ulsterman so bad.
Who is the Ulsterman? There are so many mysterious things going on which they haven't answered yet. Who is the Ulsterman? Why does he own 4% of the company? And what is in Dundee? And what is in Christchurch?
What did he do in Ulster?
Yeah.
We need to find out more about Logan's upbringing, right? And what turned him out to... How he turned out to be so...
Exactly. And how did he get those scars on his back?
Emotionless and twisted and scarred and bad. How did he turn so bad?
Particularly after such a gruesome episode that paints him in such a bad light. So,
Maybe it's going to be we'll start feeling sympathy for Logan when he goes up to Dundee and finds, is he Scottish? Is Logan Scottish?
Well, Brian Cox is Scottish, right?
But I think, Logan is a good Scottish name, right?
Yeah, I think.
Logan is Scottish. His brother was called Ewan, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Logan and Ewan are two great Scottish names. So Dundee is going to be old family.
Ooh.
Yeah.
This is exciting.
Okay, so we get to find out some Logan backstory next episode. On which note, Candy, Lydia, thank you so much for coming in. We will be watching the next 3 episodes, and then that's it for the season.
Wow, too soon.
Too soon.
Yeah.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.